when soul loss occurs, we find people gain weight. And I find that this is an interesting thing that I've discovered in my own practice, is that when soul loss occurs, the soul is what anchors the body on the earth plane. And when the soul starts to leave, the body actually starts holding on to physical weight to feel like they're anchoring on the plane, because they feel like they're leaving. And the body, you know, and the soul's like, I'm not ready, but part of them's out. So the body starts to hold on to more and more weight to ground them. And I find when that soul fragments come back, the body goes back to its ideal body weight. Mm. So that's really a neat thing to see when people say, I've tried everything, I'm eating right, I'm exercising, I'm sleeping right, all these things, but those parts of them are lost. And when we bring those parts back, all of a sudden it's like that missing piece, and their body just goes back to the right shape that their body's supposed to have.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Cech. In today's episode, Paul is talking with shaman and Cech faculty member Andy Cech about soul loss and recovery. A big thank you to our premier sponsors, By Optimizers, Paleo Valley, and Organifi. Their support is essential in producing this podcast, and we hope you will show your support by visiting them online and trying all the amazing products that they produce. Please check the show notes at checkinstitute.com/podcast for links, details, and discounts. To get the latest news from Paul and the Living 4D podcast, subscribe to his newsletter at checkinstitute.com/podcast.
Yuval Noah Harari, Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, and a number of AI and tech-based futurists posit that there is no soul and no God or need for God. Harari informs us that we are all but hackable animals and that soon we will own nothing and be happy. Ray Kurzweil and others suggest that the human mind or soul can be loaded onto a hard drive and stored in a cloud, and be downloaded into another body with the intention of eternal life. As attractive as this may sound to those who have an obvious fear of death, inspiring the funding of such so-called science, to state that the human soul can be uploaded to a cloud and be reinserted into another body is a clear admission that what the soul is eludes them. But are these things true? Is the soul real? Human testimony for the soul goes back to the origins of written record of the soul, be that rock carvings, stone tablets, petroglyphs, hieroglyphs, oral transmission of myths, or written documents. Additionally, today we have numerous books and countless studies substantiating life after death and reincarnation, which necessitate the existence of a soul. Are the perceptions of all those people throughout antiquity, including mystics, seers, wise men, saints and sages, medicine men, and storytellers, confused? Is belief in, or our experiences of our own soul and the souls of others, but irrational babblings of a confused humanity, as Yuval Noah Harari and the World Economic Forum and other materialists would suggest? Could it be that the fallacy of the soul held by materialistic scientists and technologists is actually a symptom of their own deep trauma, confusion, and a need for soul recovery? Those with soul loss often lack the capacity to feel, experience, or relate to their own soul, which is why the ancient practice of soul recovery is so common among shamanic traditions worldwide. Today, Angie Cech and I will explore what soul loss and soul recovery is from different perspectives. Before I begin my dialogue with Angie, I feel it is important to define what the soul is. The fact is, there are as many conceptions of the soul as there are people, and there are also distinct differences in how the soul is conceived within each of the world's great religions, and even differences within branches of the same religion. Surely you are each aware that there is confusion over the meanings of important words like God, love, soul, spirit, mind, consciousness, and many other important words, regardless of the language spoken. This results in an inability to make meaning, generates assumptions or rejections of another's conceptions because one person's conception doesn't match the author's, speaker's, or presenter's conceptions. Another case in point is that many of the words we read in scriptures today and use today, such as soul, do not have the same meanings as they did when written in the scriptures. For example, the word soul, as used during the time when the Bible was composed, wasn't used to imply the inner consciousness or essence of an individual, but was used in the same way we use the word mind today. This fact presents one of the many dangers of reading scriptures literally without going into the background and doing research on the etymology of, history of, and use of words to understand the context in which they were used, and therefore what the authors intended to communicate. One of many examples I could share of just how radically far away most Christians are today from understanding the actual meanings of Bible passages can be found in the excellent book by Manly P. Hall titled, How to Understand Your Bible. In this highly recommended book for any Christian or student of the Bible, Hall clearly shows that to understand the Bible requires that one understand the culture of the people mentioned in any location in the Bible, as well as the etymology of the words they used and the context in which they were used at that time. He also shows, as is so often the case with world scripture, that the actual meanings of many words or stories are cloaked, and that it is impossible to understand the Bible and scripture in general with literal interpretations. To avoid any such confusion, I will lay the groundwork for what Angie and I are speaking of when we use the term soul or spirit. Defining the soul. If you study the literature on the soul as described in the world's great religions, myths, the philosophers, mystics, gurus, and even the great scientists of the world, you will find that there is little agreement among them regarding specifics of the spirit and soul, yet there is a consensus that human beings do have a soul, the scientific materialists and atheists being the exception. But, as Carl Jung pointed out, for something to be rejected, it must first be real. The following descriptions and commentary on the soul are derived from Webster's Dictionary and the excellent book, The Soul and Its Mechanism by Alice A. Bailey, page 73 through 76, which I will follow by some definitions and distinctions of my own. Webster's defines the soul in most interesting terms and from the standpoint of Eastern wisdom with great exactitude. Any entity conceived of as the essence, substance, or actuating cause of individual life, especially of life manifested in physical activities, the vehicle of individual existence, separate in nature from the body and usually held separable in existence. As one investigates the different interpretations as to the nature of the soul, three points of view emerge, and these have been well summarized for us in Webster's Dictionary. First, the soul has been treated as an entity or subject, manifested especially in man's volitional thinking activities. It is the subject of the experience mediated by the body. It is not the mind, but that which thinks and wills. Second, the soul is identified with the mind or with conscious experience. This is the usual sense of the word in psychology and is the general conception of idealists. Third, the soul is treated as a function or the sum of the functions of the brain. Thus, Pierre J.G. Cabanis, 1757 to 1808, taught that the brain secretes thought as the stomach digests food. Webster adds the following comment, which is appropriate in its application to the present trend of world thought. Some conceptions, such as that of Fechner, that the soul is the whole unitary spiritual process in conjunction with the whole unitary bodily process, appear to stand midway between the idealistic and materialistic views. Perhaps, after all, the noble middle path which the Buddhist emphasizes holds for the coming generation a way of escaping from these extreme positions. The Egyptians held that the soul was a divine ray acting through a peculiar fluid-like compound, whilst the Jews regarded it as the vital principle. The Hindus teach that the human soul is a portion of the immutable principle, the soul of the world, the anima mundi, the all-pervading ether, akasha, of space. This ether is simply the conductor of certain types of energy and serves as an interrelating medium between the essential spirit and tangible matter. Pythagoras, who did so much in his day to link the Eastern and Western philosophies, gave the same teaching. In China, Lao Tzu taught that the spiritual soul is united to the semi-material vital soul, and between them, they animate the physical body. The Greeks, in turn, held that the soul, with all the mental faculties, was separable from the body, whilst the Romans regarded the soul as a triplicity, a spiritual soul, an intellectual soul or mind, and a vital body. Plato expounded the doctrine of the soul in the following manner. He believed the soul to have three parts. One, an immortal or rational part coming from God. Another, a mortal, animal, or sensitive part, the seat of the appetite and sensation belonging to the body. And a third, lying between these and making their interaction possible, will or spirit, by means of which reason conquered desire. Plants have the lowest part, animals have the two lower, but the rational part is exclusively human. This rational soul can be regarded as immaterial and metaphysical in nature, incapable of being perceived by the senses, and only to be grasped by the intellect. The union of the mortal, material, and physical body was only a minor incident of its long career. Plato thus drew a fundamental distinction between soul and body. See Bernard Hollander, M.D., In Search of the Soul, Volume 1, page 35. Aristotle regarded the soul as the sum of the vital principles and as being to the body what vision is to the eye. The soul was to him the true being in the body, and with him Plotinus was in agreement. He regarded the soul as the living sentiency of the body belonging to a higher degree of being than matter. In my studies of Plotinus, the Greek metaphysician who, even to this very day, is regularly referenced by quantum physicists and authors on this topic, noted that the soul has three essential qualities: to abide, to reflect, and to represent or represent. The abiding function of the soul would be akin to or equal to the divine witness, the unmoved mover. To reflect means to look back and utilize memory. To represent means that we have the capacity, based on our reflection, to change the way we present ourselves, represent ourselves. Therefore, the soul has memory, and it has the ability to represent, to change its ways, to change its belief, thoughts, and actions. All the while, the abiding function is the unmoved mover. The entire field of psychology originated as the study of the soul and how to work with and heal it. Depth psychology, founded by Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, is, in my experience, by far the most comprehensive and complete branch of psychology when it comes to understanding the soul and addressing the human being as a whole. In depth psychology, we have the following definition of the psyche or soul. Psyche, a spiritual, imaginal, somatic spectrum. A system that can't be studied by dividing into parts like instincts and drives. It is also autonomous and cannot be reduced to simpler systems. A psychic fact only makes sense when we see its position in the whole that influences it. The psyche is real, imaginal rather than imaginary. It has both physical and psychic properties, archetypes, and the more mental processes at the top. This pole has far more energy than its counterpart, and instinct and mechanical systems at the bottom, which are two aspects of the same thing and between which energy flows. The spiritual pole is dynamic, the other material. One never reduces to the other. Note, here the term imaginal is used as co-equal to what we know of as perception. Anything we perceive, be it our own thoughts, emotions, our body, or the objects and events around us, can only become conscious because of the soul's imaginal faculty, without which our existence would be akin to a robot or a machine without self-consciousness. Carl Jung worked for a number of years with Wolfgang Pauli, one of the pioneers of quantum physics, to more objectively define what the psyche is. They concluded that the psyche is pure energy at one pole and matter at the other pole. Marie-Louise von Franz, who for many years was Jung's personal assistant and also became a famous Jungian analyst and author of many excellent books, elaborated on Jung and Pauli's work and described how the pole of pure energy, which is linked to the archetypes that are integral to the human psyche, links to the material aspects of our body via the chakra system. Chakra means wheel or vortex. The chakra system is actually a system that interfaces with the elements. Though the elements are named by their familiar substances, earth, water, fire, air, etc., the alchemists use these terms to signify ranges of vibration or frequency. The human spirit-soul complex emerges from the infinite energy and frequency of Source, or unconditional love if you prefer, and steps down into progressively denser states of vibration as classified by the elements, the highest vibrational state of spirit becoming that of mind, followed by ether, the first state of tangible manifestation as an explicate reality. Aether steps down into plasma, followed by fire, air, water, and earth. Spiritually speaking, our spirit soul exists in and is alive in each of these domains in unique ways. For example, within our spirit soul, there is a mental being or representation of us, and each of our chakras is tuned to a given element or vibrational domain in which that specific aspect of us exists. When our physical, biological body dies, the soul transitions out of the elemental domains of earth and water and progresses as a conscious being into the domains of air, fire, and the succeeding higher vibrational domains of plasma, ether, and higher mind. Science is only recently able to measure frequencies as high as the ether element and cannot yet objectively measure frequencies of mind other than by monitoring the effects produced by mind within the body and brain. An exception in this regard is Ibrahim Karim's science of biogeometry. Dr. Karim has invented specific instruments for measuring subtle energies of a vast range of frequencies, including frequency ranges attributed to mind and spirit. Note, if you have not listened to my podcast with Dr. Karim on biogeometry, I highly recommend you listen to them in the order they were presented on my podcast, which is episode 97, episode 119 with his daughter Doria Karim, and finally episode 200. Additionally, episode 221 with Dr. Robert Gilbert on sacred geometry, Dr. Karim's first U.S. biogeometry instructor, is an excellent interview and covers topics relevant to our discussion here. The violet crown chakra, being the highest vibration in the Hindu seven chakra system, links with pure energy, which is what most people would call God and a scientist would call zero-point energy. Each successive chakra acts like a step-down transformer until you get to the root chakra or red light in the earth element, which interfaces with the material aspects of our body. What we learn from a study of the chakra system, which is integral to the science of yoga, is that each chakra represents an energy domain in which specific psychic themes are active. Additionally, each chakra resonates with a specific nerve plexus and hormonal glands. In fact, it is through analysis of traumatic events that the shaman and healers can explore the context in which the trauma occurred, correlating it with the chakra system, and they have a very good idea of which energy domain or aspect of the soul to investigate to find the fragmented aspects of their patient's soul. For example, painful challenges and traumas related to giving and receiving love associate with the heart, cardiac plexus, and thymus gland, and soul fragments can be found within the energy domain of the heart chakra. Additionally, those with soul loss in the domain of the heart chakra often present with physical challenges to the heart, lungs, and immune system regulation. One of the empirical indicators that soul recovery is real and produces tangible results is that upon returning, one or more fragments of the soul that has lost integration within the body in the region of the heart chakra is that positive changes or complete healing of heart, lung, and immune system pathology often occurs when no other form of treatment was working. Before I go any further, if there are any of you listening that for any reason do not believe the chakras are real, you would be worse than wrong in that belief. There has been scientific validation of the chakra system since the late 70s and countless research studies done since. If you'd like to learn about the subtle energies of the body, soul, spirit, or the chakra system of different cultures, the book I recommend to my students is titled The Subtle Body, An Encyclopedia of Your Energetic Anatomy by Cindy Dale, Rodney Nordlinger, et al. Cindy Dale is a genius, a powerful healer, and has a series on Gaia TV. You can also investigate books written by the celebrated scientist William A. Tiller, for which there are four. Additionally, the book titled Vibrational Medicine by Richard Gerber, MD, is an excellent resource among numerous others I could share. To put the relationship between the subtle energies of consciousness and your body in perspective, at the pole of pure energy, the soul resonates with archetypes. Archetypes are essential aspects or functions of consciousness, without which we would not be capable of making meaning of any thoughts, images, or ideas we have. This domain is non-local and connects to the universal galactic solar and more local noosphere, or mind of the Earth, also called the collective unconscious. Here we have interface with our seventh chakra, which manages all psychic functions related to the use of our intuition and our beliefs regarding what we think God is or isn't, and what we believe will happen to us when we die a physical death. The seventh chakra integrates with and steps down into the sixth chakra, which links to our capacity for vision and our supersensory capacity for clairvoyance, or seeing through. Each chakra represents a vibrational domain, and each chakra, like the two I've just described, has specific light and color frequencies associated with it and links to specific regions and functions within the body. It is because of the chakra system and its integrated relationship with the psyche, for example, that belief in a medicine, a placebo, usually works as well as an actual chemically based medicine or better. Few medicines tested by the FDA can outperform a placebo. It is also true that we are equally capable of a nocebo effect, which means that negative beliefs or associations of any type have just as much power to transform our thoughts, feelings, emotions, and physiology. The skilled observer soon finds that we don't manifest what we want, we manifest what we believe. For example, there are many documented cases in which a patient was given an incorrect diagnosis and went on to develop the disease that matched the diagnosis. Yet, upon review of the patient's medical records, it was evident that prior to reaching the false diagnosis, there was no evidence of the disease within their body. Keep in mind that the chakras interface with hormonal glands. Because hormones are molecules that are so sensitive to subtle vibrations or frequencies, they literally transform the light of consciousness into experiences within our body. Just as subatomic particles bridge the gap between the implicate domain of spirit, of the wave domain of quantum physics, with the explicate domain of the created universe, hormones bridge the gap between the subtle vibrations of spirit flowing through the chakras with our biological body. A simple means of experiencing how the chakras integrate your mental functions with your bodily experience is to pay attention to what you feel happening within yourself when you think of painful experiences, negative thoughts, or express anger or hatred toward another person. Next, smile. Think positive, happy thoughts, and as fast as you can change your mental orientation, your inner experience of your body changes to reflect your thoughts. The emotions you feel are produced in large part by the actions of specific hormones that resonate with your thoughts via the chakra system of the body. In Jungian psychology, the terms for expressing the nature of the soul are anima and animus. The anima is the feminine expression of the soul within a male's body and being, and the animus is the male soul nature within the female body. This orientation is present because Source, God, or Zero, is the truth behind all manifestation. Therefore, if we consider the masculine as positive and the feminine as negative, then the human male needs the negative expression of the anima as soul to counterbalance the body and vice versa for the female. The relative balance between the physical body and the subtle body equals zero, or unconditional love, placing all living beings in resonance with source energy and intelligence. In Rudolf Steiner's description of the soul, he speaks of the eternal aspect of the soul as the I being, and describes how the soul expresses itself through the mineral soul, biological soul, the awareness soul, the intellectual soul, and as we continue to evolve in consciousness, we gain the consciousness soul, intuitive soul, and finally the spirit soul. Some authors sharing Steiner's teachings have a slightly different conception of the stages of soul development and evolution, but this is a general notion that Steiner shares. Cindy Dale, in her excellent book, The Subtle Body, page 475, defines spirit and soul as follows. The spirit, the immortal and eternal essence that carries one's spiritual truths, which also formulate the spiritual purposes and gifts related to psychic abilities and the Hindu siddhi or spiritual powers, such as extrasensory perception, levitation, and the ability to read minds, etc. From an Eastern perspective, the spirit carries the dharma or mission. The soul, the aspect of the self that moves through time and space to garner experiences. I define the soul as consciousness, memory, and wisdom gained by experience, and the spirit as the flow of energy and information that animates our being. The analogy I often give my students is the shaman and the drum. The drum is held in the shaman's hand. It has a body. It has a skin that vibrates and creates resonance, but it cannot play itself. The spirit, the flow of energy and information, that is directing the shaman which rhythm to play, how hard to hit it, and various other nuances, is what is actually giving the soul, the drum, an experience. The soul, drum, not only resonates, vibrates, but it has, as I said before, memory. Therefore, it is the spirit that is directing the drumstick and giving the drum vibration, which makes the music, which produces the experience that our soul has. So here you can see the spirit, that which is the flow of energy and information, is what is giving us an experience. Though there is much more I could share on this topic, and I do so in my upcoming Spirit Gym book series and web-based training membership program, what I've shared here lays the foundation for the basis of spirit and soul. As we now enter dialogue with Angie Check on soul loss and soul recovery, you should all know exactly what we mean when we use the term soul or spirit.
So, Angie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I did an introduction getting some clarification on soul and spirit because of the, gross confusion on those important terms and the tremendous mishmash of what those words mean to people. After hearing the introduction that I gave, is there anything that you would like to add to your sense of soul or spirit or what it means to you and what it means when you, as a shaman, use that word?
Yeah, I think you did a fabulous job of that introduction because there are so many misconceptions out there. And I think you did a great job of just covering all the different bases, different backgrounds. I really enjoyed that. So what I wanted to share also is to, when I work with soul, it comes from personal experience. And I think that all of us, when we're learning these metaphysical things, when we start working with chakras and we're working with the spirit and the soul, you kind of have to take what you learn from books until you start having a firsthand relationship with them.
Right.
And so for me, when I started working with this, and I talked about a little bit in the Death and Beyond podcast, I see the soul, we think of, where does the soul reside? And sometimes people say in my heart or, my head, or where does it reside? And the soul actually resides in the entire body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important concept for people to understand, that it's in your fingers and your toes and it's in your blood. It's every part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that people kind of get confused on, is where is it exactly? And they're trying to pinpoint some piece of them. It's kind of like looking for God inside themselves and wondering where it's located.
Yes. And well, it really is the same issue.
Absolutely, 100%.
I mean, the soul is God embodied.
Right.
As I say to my students, only God can give a soul. So all souls are really the divine in you. When we use the word I am thinking, I am running down the road, I'm driving my bike, I am hungry, the I is the locus of consciousness within us. And that I is that which emerges from God. And the I is the being of perception behind our senses. So it's your eye that's listening to me right now and looking at me. And the sort of magical, mysterious paradox is that the I in you is only different because you have a soul, but ultimately what's looking through your eyes at me and my eyes at you is the same source of consciousness, which is God, or whatever people want to call it. And so I think that's one of the really key things to understand, is that we couldn't have a soul unless God dreamed us into existence. And the reason I say dreamed us into existence is because in the metaphysical structure of how creation emerges, mind is a duality. So it's a principle of the two. But before that, you have the one, which is being, which would be the soul of creation or existence itself. And then before that, you have zero or source, out of which comes Om, the sound of creation, or in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. So it is ultimately God that is the I of all of us, but it is the spirit is what's expressing itself, and the soul is what's experiencing everything, neither of which could be aware of anything without the I. So the I is actually the deepest level. And as we'll get into, when people have soul loss, their soul loss is actually an inability to perceive through the I. It's kind of like, if you, to use an analogy, if you think of a mirror, that would be the I. And certainly you've seen when people have hit mirrors or punched them or gone into a public restroom that actually had a mirror, and you can see pieces of the mirror missing and there's black chunks where the mirror used to be. So soul loss is really, in my conception, it's a lot like a piece of the mirror has fallen out.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be looking at your face and you can't see your cheek.
Right.
Or your hand or whatever. And so returning the piece of the mirror, all of a sudden you go, oh, there's the rest of my face.
Yes, I have some great analogies that I use when I do my work, and I'd love to share them. One of them is thinking of a puzzle, mm-hmm. you know, and so if you're looking at a puzzle and a couple pieces are missing,
mm-hmm.
the eye always goes to your eye, physical eye, looks at those holes in the puzzle.
Yes.
And you can't get past that. So it doesn't matter how beautiful the picture is, we always look at what's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how metaphor for someone's life. It's like it might be perfect, but they can't see it as perfect because they're still focusing on those missing pieces.
Yeah.
And so when we soul retrieve, we put those pieces of the puzzle back in, and we put a bit in, then the magic occurs because now you can see the whole picture.
Yes.
Another analogy I use is of a tapestry or of a beautiful painting on the wall. And if you took away all the dark colors, just to leave the light colors, which would be a metaphor of the beautiful things in our life, but we're hiding the shadows, well, then the picture looks flat and it doesn't look real because it's missing its vitality that comes from also portraying the darkness. So it's the light and the dark that creates this beautiful picture. And so part of that is embracing all of us and not trying to reject something that happened, or I wish that didn't happen, and stow it away somewhere because that creates this flaw in the painting. So it's like, no, we got to have all of that in this picture to make it beautiful. And that's the picture of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the kind of the analogies I use when I do this work.
Most anyone listening to my podcast is likely to be aware of the many health benefits of extra virgin olive oil. There are countless research papers on its benefits, and it can be used in smoothies, baking, cooking, as well as a nutritional aid, and even on your skin for improved skin health. Unfortunately, a tiny fraction of the extra virgin olive oil used is made from authentic organic sources and can be toxic for your body due to residual pesticides. Additionally, the polyphenol content in olive oil degenerates over time or degrades. Sadly, most store-bought olive oils can be years old by the time they make it to the store shelf, meaning that there are not many polyphenols or life-giving nutrients left in the product. But Paleo Valley comes to the rescue again. Paleo Valley's new extra virgin olive oil comes from a certified organic valley in rural Greece, where the olives are grown using sustainable farming practices. No pesticides or chemicals are used during the cultivation process. This dedication to organic farming not only preserves the natural integrity of the olives, but also ensures that the final product is free from harmful residues. Discover Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil, a powerhouse of health benefits. Pressed just after harvest, it retains the health support of polyphenols at their peak. This ensures you get the full health advantages only fresh, cold-pressed olive oil can offer. This high-potency olive oil is fresh, pure, and loaded with beneficial nutrients. Packed with antioxidants, and polyphenols, Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil naturally contains polyunsaturated fats, which contribute to healthy brain and heart function and support the body's natural response to inflammation. Not only is Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil a powerful superfood to add to your daily diet, it is packaged in dark glass bottles to maximize freshness and minimize nutrient loss. The dark glass provides protection against the deteriorating effects of light. If you want to support your whole body, including your brain, heart, and skin, and make the best tasting, highly nutritious foods for you and your family, there's no better place to go for super clean, nutrient-rich extra virgin olive oil than Paleo Valley. To get your organic extra virgin olive oil now, go to paleovalley.com/CHEK15. That's paleovalley.com/CHEK15. No promo code is required. Just use the URL to get 15% off your order. My family and I love Paleo Valley's excellent products and use them every day, and I'm more than confident that you will love them too.
To begin with, not everybody is likely to have listened to your first podcast. Can you give an overview of your background and how it is that you came to understand the nature of spirit and soul?
In terms of this podcast, my background would be, you know, the things I did in the metaphysical world would be like, I'm a graduate of the fifth North American three-year program through Michael Harner's Foundation of Shamanic Studies. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I did a lot of work in learning about the different dimensions that we live in, the upper, middle, lower world, and understanding, you know, the spirit and what soul is. I also was a graduate from Mystery School through Nine Gates, and that's a great program as well, where it helps you understand who you are and going through the chakras of the body. Mm-hmm. I've dabbled in energy medicine. That also has helped me understand this. And I would say just personal experiences, being around people who have passed on and dying, that's also helped me come to my conclusions of what I know about the soul. And since I was a small child, I've had some great connections to God and to understanding what life is that was probably beyond my years at the time and didn't know what I was knowing. That helped me understand who we are and what we are.
But you also have a degree in energy medicine, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So you said dabbled.
Dabbled because, you know, I, yes, I do have it. Yes, I did take an energy medicine course as well. Yes.
Yeah. How would you define what soul loss is? How does it happen? And what is it that actually gets lost?
So it usually occurs, you know, when some traumatic event happens in someone's life. And so it can be mental, emotional stuff. It can be physical things as well. So a major car accident. And so basically what you can think of is if you had this major accident where you thought, I'm going to die, the soul ejects from the body. It's to kind of to avoid pain, to not be in there. It says, I'm getting out of this body. I'm not going to experience that, and leaves the body. But then you don't die, and then that part of your soul doesn't know how to come back. Mm. And so there needs help for it to come back. And so it's kind of, you know, the way I see it is like a silver string with like a string pulling the soul out, and it's like tethering like a balloon above them because it's not back in the body. And that takes, you know, a guide or some kind of intention to bring that part back into that person. Mm-hmm. So soul loss can happen through addictions. It can be used, happen from, you know, doing psychedelics when you shouldn't, and it blows you out of your mind and you don't know how to get back into your body. So soul loss can happen through, you know, like rape, abuse, bad relationships. So abusive relationships, mm-hmm. Anytime where you're scared to be in your body, you wish you weren't alive. If you're afraid to be in it, where you don't feel included as well. So I find that, you know, if you're in a family where you have that event where you go to Thanksgiving dinner and everybody's picking on you and you feel like the black sheep, there's part of you that wants to leave. And so it does. Mm. And so we'll see fragments of that soul. So the analogy I have for that situation is think of a beautiful vase and it kind of gets chipped. And a little chip of that vase is left behind in that scene. And you'll know if this is happening to you in your life because you can't get past that event. For some reason, it's like Groundhog's Day. Part of you is reliving that event over and over and over again. So even though it might have been 20, 30 years ago, you're like that Thanksgiving event and you're still hanging on to it. And you're like, why can't I get over it? Or that relationship, or you're still afraid of cars because of that car accident. And it's like, I can't move forward in life. So there's part of you that's stuck. Mm-hmm. And so bringing that part of you back allows you to be fully in the present. And so that's when you can identify if someone needs is suffering from soul loss is because they're not fully present and their mind is going back of woulda, shoulda, coulda. I want to change the past. Why did that happen? And they're stuck.
To expand on it for the listeners, you're talking about bringing that part of you back. What is it that you're bringing back when you're doing a soul recovery process? You know, when we're bringing something back, it almost sounds like an object you can pick up. Is there a way you can describe what it is that you're actually bringing back?
Yeah, I guess you could talk about it in like quantum energy. It could be like an energetic part of them, you know, so there would be a part of the non-physical them that is still stuck in that dimension or that past.
How do you find something like that? What does it look like to you?
You know, this could be different for everybody, but when it looks like, it actually looks like them. And so oftentimes when I go back, I see the person as their 6-year-old self or as their 12-year-old self. And I see them reenacting that scene again and again and again. They're stuck there. So it's actually like a vision to me. So I do a lot of seeing. And so that's my gift is to see things. So I will see them in that spot and I can see that they're stuck. And oftentimes when I go with a client and we revisit those parts of their life that are painful, I'll scan the room to see. And oftentimes it's like we're watching a movie and instead of looking at just you or being inside your body, I want you to step outside your body and look at that person and now look at yourself and look around the room. And oftentimes we find a little version of themselves hiding behind the couch or hovering in the ceiling or on the rooftop or outside the home or running away from the scene or flying from the scene. So they're not actually looking at themselves, but a part of them that is like an energetic code of them. So it's like I wouldn't say ghost, but it's like a, you know, transparent version of them that's still present in that space.
When I'm conducting particularly deep shamanic ceremonies, there's times when people get so far out of their body that their body starts to die. And I have to go get them and bring them back, which is often baffling to people. But I'm always tracking them using my clairvoyance. And it's very much like what you say. I see, for example, I will follow them. Usually they're in the astral dimension when this happens because the medicine takes them up to a very high vibration. And so what I'll actually see is what looks like a luminous light body versus like when I'm looking at you now, I see your skin and your eyes.
Yes.
But if I was looking at you in the astral dimension, I would see what looks like you made out of light.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to use the word ghost, but it's like that apparition. It's like mm-hmm. you see through them, but yes.
Yeah. You know, I have to track them in my light body. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually doing what I call traveling in spirit body, but I actually have to go get them. Sometimes I have to take them by the hand. Some of them times they don't want to come back because they don't want to be here on the earth plane. So I might have to grab them and hold on to them and then bring them down into their body. And sometimes I can breathe them into me. I can use my intention and my breath and draw them into my lungs and then blow them back into their body. And it's like the body will even jump sometimes, like
yes.
It turns back on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they usually get upset at me and say, why did you do that? I was having so much fun. I just, you know, they tell me all about how beautiful it was out there. I say, yeah, well, I'm doing that because the purpose here is to heal, not to continue to escape the healing.
Right.
But, you know, it brings me back to Edward Edinger's definition of consciousness. Consciousness, and I'm paraphrasing, consciousness is a psychic substance produced not blindly, but in living awareness of opposites. And so, because I've known this definition for many, many years, when I look at a soul, I see the psychic substance, because really the soul is consciousness within the individual. And so I really do feel that consciousness is a tangible reality, just like the ether or the atmosphere. Like you can see steam coming out of a kettle and you could say, you know, that's water in at a different vibrational rate.
Right.
And you could grab some steam. You know, you could take a plastic bag and scoop it up in the bag and it would be there until it turned into water again.
Right.
So it's when I work in this particular type of instance, but even when I'm doing soul recovery more along the lines that you do, I'm actually seeing the little boy or the little girl or the broken adult, but I can actually go touch them and there's really something there.
Yeah, it's actually like a tangible because you're working in that dimension. So I will actually have my client reach and touch them themselves and hug them or kiss them and and give them love. It's what they really need and feeling calm and to bring them back because they left from it because they were in a chaotic environment. So they're not going to come back if the environment's still chaotic.
Yeah.
And so the person has to be in that relaxed state to invite love back in.
One of the things that I see as a common cause of soul loss is when people don't like a part of their body.
Yeah, 100%. And so when a person tells me, oh, I don't like my thighs or I don't like my tummy or I don't like my butt, you're actually experiencing soul loss in there because you're not loving that part of you. So you'll find pockets of emptiness in those areas of your body, which allows, it's a different podcast, but allows for entity possession because there's space in there that's not being used. And so it's like, oh, another soul could enter your body.
Yeah.
And so when we come back and say, hey, I'm going to treat my body as if I would a sick child. If you don't like something about your body, if your child was sick, you wouldn't spank them and slap them around and say, get over it. You'd pick them up and you'd hug them and you'd kiss them and you'd nurture them. That's the same thing that person needs to do to their body and say, I love my thighs. I love my belly. And what is it, body? What do you need to be nurtured so that you can heal? Because you seems to be holding on to weight or holding on to water or inflamed. Mm-hmm. And then they have that kind of conversation with their body versus, I hate this. I wish I could just cut it out. And oftentimes that's what they do. They go to a surgeon, just try to cut it out and escape the work that really needs to be done and heal their body.
Yeah, I would say the most common area I've seen soul loss in is the breasts. I've had a long string of women in my career that just didn't like their breasts, often after giving birth to one or two or three children, and their breasts lose their perkiness and they get saggy and women start really having a disgust or a disdain of their own breast. They don't feel well, you know, I think the way a man relies on his strength and maybe the sharpness of his mind to identify himself, women are more oriented toward their physical beauty in general, as a stereotypical type thing. And you'll often see them standing with their shoulders rounded and it's as though they're trying to hide that part of themselves.
Yeah. So when you see also disease in the body, that can be a sign of soul loss too. So again, a woman's breast, if she's having those issues, it could lead to breast cancer.
The soul is really a spiritual being living in and inhabiting a body, but it's also the consciousness that is directing the body. So if a person doesn't love themselves, the cells of the body feel like a child that is not getting loved, and they behave very similar. I mean, a child that's not loved can be very sickly because of it and psychologically ill. And I think that's also one of the reasons for cancer is that when a person is in this divided state in their relationship with their body, the parts that they're not loving begin to feel isolated. And so the cells, I think, start reacting to this trauma, this psychological trauma. And it's as though they themselves aren't part of the family. And so I think in this state of, I would call it sadness, the cells don't have the consciousness of the individual to direct the cellular functions. And I perceive shamanically or spiritually that the manifestation of the diseased tissue is like a physical image of the psychic energy that's involved.
Yeah, and you know, when the soul is gone, soul is responsible for our vitality, you know, and so our life force energy is connected to our soul. So when we lose that vitality, we lose our health. And so we see the diminishing of our body from that soul loss.
Yeah.
So oftentimes people feel more energized when we bring those fragments back because they're like, oh my gosh, I feel like, you know, it's not just their energetic levels, but all their senses become more heightened. They say, I can see better, I can hear better, I can taste more, I can feel more. You know, and so they even tell me they have a sense of walking taller and feeling more in their body, more coordinated. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like they become fully inhabited to their body. And it's like they were gone for a while and they're like, whoa, I can't believe I was missing all this mm-hmm. about life. I also find when soul loss occurs, we find people gain weight. And I find that this is an interesting thing that I've discovered in my own practice is that when soul loss occurs, the soul is what anchors the body on the earth plane. And when the soul starts to leave, the body actually starts holding on to physical weight to feel like they're anchoring on the plane because they feel like they're leaving. And the body, you know, and the soul's like, I'm not ready, but part of them's out. So the body starts to hold on to more and more weight to ground them. And I find when that soul fragments come back, the body goes back to its ideal body weight. Mm. So that's really a neat thing to see when people say, I've tried everything, I'm eating right, I'm exercising, I'm sleeping right, all these things, but those parts of them are lost. And when we bring those parts back, all of a sudden it's like that missing piece and their body just goes back to the right shape that their body's supposed to have.
I've also seen cases where people had, for example, numbness in fingers or toes or body parts that there wasn't a neurological or orthopedic explanation for. But all of a sudden, people will say things like, I don't know why, but I can feel my fingers now. I haven't felt my fingers in years. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's happened several times for me is one of the first comments people will make is, wow, the colors are so bright. Mm-hmm. Like they'll look at the wall, you know, or a picture on the wall, and it's like they're seeing it for the first time.
Yes.
I've always found that very fascinating.
Yes, yes. That's one of the first things is their eyesight. But then they'll eat something and go, wow, this just tastes so incredibly good. What's different about this? And it's like it's now they're experiencing it fully.
Yeah.
Sometimes we find with soul loss, we also talk about women who can't get pregnant. If they've had, could be that they don't like their tummy or whatever, and they're putting negative energy in towards their uterus. But it can also be caused from a miscarriage or an abortion where that soul was in their body and it's not fully separated from them. Mm. And so that soul energetically is still in them. And so until that soul has been energetically removed, they will not get pregnant. And so I've seen where I've helped them energetically remove these souls from their uterus, and then next thing you know, they're pregnant.
That's interesting. I haven't run across that.
Yeah, it's a powerful thing because, it's like, why can't I get pregnant? Why can't I? And then when we go in, I'm like, there's these souls still there. And part of it is because they denied that experience, whether it be a miscarriage or an abortion, they just pretend it didn't happen. And so they're denying that life, and that life came into their life for a reason. So they have to acknowledge that soul. And part of the work is to get clear with that and say, hey, why did you come to me? What was your purpose? And once that soul feels heard, then it's free to go. But it's almost like it's locked onto them until they've been acknowledged.
Mm. Must make for quite a challenging experience for the souls that are in wombs that never do get acknowledged.
Right. And they're stuck. So they can't move on. So they're this in this just kind of like a ghost. Yeah. It's a limbo. And it's like, I would like to move on, but I can't. And so you're helping the person, but you're also helping that unborn fetus. Mm. You know, soul recovery is done with intention of going in there. And so it's done in like a meditative state where you're guiding your client to find those fragments of them that are missing. And not everything in your life is a soul loss. We go in together and look. Let's say a person's father beat them. Oftentimes we think, oh, they might have suffered soul loss. That's the first thing we think because we didn't want to be there, didn't want to be beat by daddy. But when you go back and look, you might find that, in fact, that child rose up and became more powerful and said, you know what? I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to learn how to work out and get stronger or make myself safer. And so... You know, so a woman who's maybe saw their child die, you know, you might say there might be soul loss there because their baby died, but they might actually grounded themselves and says, you know, I'm going to take more responsibility for my life so that this doesn't happen to another of my children. Mm-hmm. So you see them ground themselves deeper, and it actually can. You see women who maybe were on drugs and something happened to their child, and now it's like that moment is when they decide to become sober and they never touch the drug again. So they didn't have soul loss; they actually. Mm-hmm. Got soul strength, soul gain, as I would say.
Yeah.
So the soul loss
to become more conscious.
More conscious. So oftentimes there was soul loss in their past, and instead of that particular event creating more soul loss, they actually gain part of their soul back because they're like, I need to be present.
Mm.
And so that's really what's happening.
Yeah, that's a very interesting concept. I will have to kind of keep my inner vision tuned to see what I see with that concept in mind. I probably wouldn't have ever noticed it because I'm always looking for what's missing, not right. what's there.
Yeah.
But I can see, actually, it makes me think of myself because, you know, my childhood was pretty tough and a lot of abuse. So I had that mindset. You know, my mindset was I'm going to fight back.
Right.
And I just kind of just became even more
right.
intense.
That's right.
You know, and I didn't even think I had a way out, so I stayed in.
Yeah. So then, you know, when you were younger, you might have had some soul loss, but you regained it from another future event. And then you said, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm not going to be the victim. I'm moving forward, and I'm going to become something so this doesn't yeah. happen. So yeah, you'd had a soul gain.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for learning and growing with me and joining me on my podcast. A quick question for you. Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's pretty much true worldwide. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 600 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate that you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's a special offer happening, and this could be exactly what you need. So here we go on some of the common symptoms that indicate you might be magnesium deficient. Are you irritable or anxious? If you're not sure, ask your partner. Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you constipated? Do you have a hard time falling asleep or getting a restful sleep? Do you feel more stressed than others that seem to be in the same or similar situations? Do you feel moody and wish your emotions were more stable? Do you feel you lack mental alertness? Do you feel you're at risk for osteoporosis and desire to build stronger bones? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, so these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body simply can't absorb. That's why I personally recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bioptimizer supplements are the best of the options available, or I wouldn't be offering them to you. I don't offer anything on my podcast that my family and I don't use ourselves. Bioptimizers is so committed to offering you the best quality products that really work that if you are not satisfied, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. In fact, they are so confident they offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. To get your magnesium breakthrough and your 10% Living 4D discount, go to bioptimizers.com/living4D. That's bioptimizers.com/living4D. Use the promo code PAUL10 to get your discount. And by the way, in addition to the discount you get by using the promo code PAUL10, you can get gifts with your purchase, up to 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited-time offer, so go to bioptimizers.com/living4D and use the promo code PAUL10 for your 10% discount. Enjoy.
Angie, how did you learn to perform the soul recovery process? And I ask that because there's all sorts of people out there doing some variation on the themes. There's quite a number of books. I've probably got at least 6 books in my library on soul recovery that are, I think, written for the public to do it. And some of them are very good. One of them is by Sandra Ingerman, who's a real shaman. But I'm just curious, how did you learn the process?
Yeah, I would say it's a compilation of learning from other shaman, looking at authors who've done some of the processes of soul recovery, soul retrieval. And so I just kind of it was kind of an interesting thought when, you know, when I think about it, is that this is kind of sounds weird, but I kind of always knew how to do it.
Yeah, I had the same experience, yeah, strangely enough.
Yeah, and it's like, I just knew how to do it. And then when people started talking about it, I'm like, I know how to do that. You know, and so I think maybe it was a past life of mine that I really, because I've been in, when I was very young, my first early experiences about being around shaman, and when things went a little weird with people, I knew exactly what to do with the person. And the shaman would go, how did you know how to do that? And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, that's amazing how you know how to hold the energy or balance the room. And I'm like, wow, I just inherently knew. So some of my, I think it's just a gift that I have, that I just know, an intuitive knowing of what, mm-hmm. how to do this work. And so, and then through confirmation of watching other people's work, I'm like, that's exactly what I do. Or I do it a little differently. And mm-hmm. it just manifests into my own process.
When I look at people clairvoyantly, for example, when people have done too much shamanic journeying with plant medicines, especially when they've been using high doses or high doses too frequently, many of them look like a mirror that's been shattered. Like instead of a coherent energy field, it literally looks like it's broken into pieces, and they're kind of vibrating and not fitting. And I'll see black areas where there's no life force energy there. And so I always could see the parts were missing. And sometimes I've had cases where, like car accident victims, where I'm sitting there talking to them, but they're actually 6 or 7 feet above their body. And I'm like, okay, this person's out of their body. And that brings up another point that just popped into my head. You know, there's a lot of people that have derealization where they're not really inhabiting their body for all the reasons we've discussed. But I think, you know, there's this huge kind of embodiment movement that's been going on for several years. That's a real issue, because if people aren't in their bodies for any reason like we talked about, then that's a real indication that they may have soul loss. But vice versa, if they don't, for example, people that don't exercise and sit at a computer all day or spend so much time on video games, I see these people kind of leaving out, and they start immersing themselves in the mental or the imaginary realm.
Yeah.
And so it's a strange reality, but you can create other realities in your mind or get sucked into other realities, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons I'm very concerned about all this virtual reality, yeah, headsets and stuff, metaverse stuff. I mean, I don't think people realize how seriously dangerous that is.
You know, to think we'll be doing soul retrievals on removing them from computer games and reality, on non-reality realms.
You know,
because their soul gets confused of which is the real, you know, and so it takes on that person instead of them, because they love that person more than they love themselves.
Yeah, they start inhabiting imaginary dimensions.
Yes.
And it's like I said in my podcast, the danger of living in two realities. The tree on your phone does not need care. The dog on your phone doesn't need to be fed, watered, or cared for. So when you depart from this realm into these, call them digital realities or imaginary realities, people don't realize that a part of them is actually going there.
Yes, absolutely.
It brings me to a case I wanted to share with you, because it's kind of an interesting case. I once worked with a woman that had all the signs of possession, and I looked into her clairvoyantly because I wanted to see, you know, who's attached to this woman. And I saw a bunny rabbit, almost like a Bugs Bunny rabbit. And I saw two other little, like, kids' stuffed animals, but they were animated. They were living psychic beings. Mm. And so I'm having this conversation with her in therapy, and I say to her, you know, I don't see the typical type of entities that possess people. And then I described these three beings, and she looked at me with kind of like a stunned look. She goes, oh my God, those are my friends from when I was a child. She said, my mother and father were both medical doctors and we lived quite far out in the country and they wouldn't spend the money for a nanny, so they left me at home all day.
Wow.
And she was only, I think, five or six years old, and she would spend the entire day at home alone. And she said, I got so lonely that I made friends out of these stuffed animals, and she had so infused her psyche into them that they had become real psychic beings inside of her. And I had to explain to her that, you know, she was 36 at the time. I said, you know, they're quite upset because you don't play with them anymore. And so they'd actually become real inside of her and they were desperate for her attention. And a lot of the things she was getting, like palpitating heart, rapid breathing, and a variety of other weird symptoms, were actually them inside toying with her physiologically to try to get her to bring her attention into where they were living inside of her.
Wow.
And it was the first time I'd ever had to extract toys out of a person's body. But they'd actually become psychic beings.
Yeah.
Because she'd infused so much of her psychic energy into them to keep her company.
Mm.
And it's the only case I've ever had like that. But it was quite shocking to me when I looked into her and I'm like, wow, it's like I'm looking into a cartoon and it's alive and these things are talking and they're saying, hey, tell her, you know, and they're like talking to me. And I'm like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm crazy or what. I'm like looking at Bugs Bunny inside this woman.
That's why I love this work. It's like, I'm not afraid to tell them when I see, because sometimes it's crazy stuff. And you're like, you know what? I'm just going to have to share this with you. And it usually makes sense to the person.
Well, when they teach you soul recovery and shamanism, what kind of things are they teaching you? I know you can't tell everything that you learn because
yeah,
so I learned from remote viewing in your shamanic class. I got chewed
trouble.
Out.
Yeah,
you got in
so
trouble.
Without asking permission to delve into, you know, the practice, I can't share that. But, you know, basically we're looking at, you know, soul, we're looking at spirit and seeing where there's loss of those. And so we also teach a person not just soul retrieval, but how to regain their spirit through dance, through song, through drumming. And so there's that connection to being grounded at the earth with earth practices. And so that's one of the things we do. And, you know, we do go in and use our intuition and, you know, our clairvoyance to go and see. And we, you know, go right into the eyes. You know, that can be a window to your soul and look
it
in.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. And so we will connect to someone that way and ask who's inside them, if there's a, you know, some an entity possession or something. Mm-hmm. And we do that kind of work as well. So there's many different realms of how we work with that, but I think all of them are valid and all important depending on the person and what they're, you know, inspired. Some people, oh, I don't want to sing or I don't want to dance, and finding a way to connect and to bring that soul back.
One of the most common ways I identify entity possession is in the eyes.
Yeah.
I can see it because usually the entity, I found the entities can't take control of both eyes for some reason.
Right.
So when I'm talking to people that have possessions, I often notice one eye is doing something else.
Yes. One's looking one way and the other person's controlling the other eye.
Yeah. And I've also had some very disturbing experiences, not that I would ever tell the patient that, but it's as though the entity's looking at me and I'm seeing somebody else looking
at me.
And
it's downright freaky. Yeah. And it gives you, it makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck.
It can be a bit disconcerting.
Yeah. If I've had those experiences as well, and you're like, whoa. And sometimes it's another human soul, but sometimes it's not a human soul at all. It's some monster soul or some demon soul. And it's, you know, it's really powerful.
I mean, there's so much going on within the human being that is just completely outside the realm of the medical system. You can see how people end up with all sorts of surgeries and drugs and get run around from here to there by doctors.
And it's nothing a doctor would ever ask.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't
or
ask.
Or most of them wouldn't even believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But you can't argue with results.
Right. And then they're like, well, I don't know what happened, but it's, you know, you're better. You know, and so, yeah.
You know, it's like I've had patients that get EMG conduction studies, like, you know, because like I said, oftentimes they'll have things like numbness in a hand or a hand that they can't type with anymore for some reason. You do soul recovery and they can go back and pass these tests and the doctors go like, well, what did you do?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, well, how do I explain this? You know,
and, that's usually the case. My clients always report back to me that they're like, so I just smile or I just say, oh, I don't know, because to explain all the things that happened to them for what to come back, it's just like, it sounds so crazy and so far-fetched because we're not, our, sadly, our community structure isn't based on these things. And so we're cast away into this psycho ward or something or like
that. Well, that's the concern.
Yeah.
Because the next referral from that doctor could be to a psych ward.
Mm-hmm.
Like this person's gone crazy.
Right.
But here they are, the sanest they've ever been.
Right.
Can you share some of your case histories of patients or clients that you've performed soul recovery on and what experiences they had when soul recovery was completed or what changed in them?
I was working with a client and for about a year and a half or so, and we're seeing tremendous health gains and, you know, some of the challenges that had been resolved in her life. But then through coaching, there was one thing that she's like, you know, I'm still struggling with. And she was struggling with a miscarriage she had. And I said, you know, she had so much stress around. I said, let's go see if there's soul lost there. And sure enough, there was. And so we went through the process. And what happened is that she miscarried at home. And so two things. There was part of that soul was still, you know, in her field and wasn't able to leave because she called the doctor and they said, she had a miscarriage and it was a fetus. And they said, take everything that came out of you, put it in a bag and bring it to the hospital. And so she just, in panic, threw everything in a bag, rushed to the hospital and dumped it off at the counter. And then they did, you know, made sure everything was out of her, irrigated, whatever they do to clean out the womb. And that's how that was it, you know? And so there's this tremendous loss of, you know, fear of she was going to die and then sadness that her child died. And so she had told me, she said, you know, I knew that I needed to do something at the time, but I didn't know what. So all I did is, out of sadness, I just planted a tree in my backyard.
Mm.
And I didn't know about this till later in the story because we had the soul recovery and we connected the soul. We actually had to do a soul retrieval and bring that soul back and release it. And so what happened is she tells me later, she goes, I didn't tell you, but I had this tree planted in my backyard. And this is about 10, 15 years later, right? So that I was working with her. And she said, the gardener always tells me, you know, that tree is not doing well. Can I pull it out? And no, leave it. And often you say twice, three times a year, you know, that tree is not really doing well. Can I pull it? And she'd always say no. And the gardener thought she was crazy because it was just like this dead tree in her backyard. And so after we did the work, a couple weeks later, she goes, you're never going to believe this. She says, the gardener rang my doorbell and goes, what did you do to that tree outside? And she goes, what do you mean? She goes, it's got flowers on it for the first time ever. And she went out there and she said she just had tears in her eyes because it had blossomed and it was just this amazing tree and it was just energetically had shifted. And it was, you know, proof that this work is, you know, valid. And so she was like, this is amazing. Because when she resolved in herself and released that soul, the tree that was a metaphor for her about this child now was saying thank you. And the tree was like just amazing and it flourished. And that was an amazing experience where you see nature around you also is reacting to our experience.
Our soul is very intimately connected with and infused with our environment. And I think from my own studies and observations, this is one of the things that has made so many native populations sick when they get forced into reservations and they have to be taken off their land because we are our environment. I wouldn't have to ask you to walk over to the house to tell me where something's at in your closet. I think that people don't really realize that the soul extends itself into its environment. You know, like there's a reason people have a favorite chair or they like things a certain way in their house. And people, like I'm one of these guys, like I don't like people coming in my office and just moving shit around and messing with stuff because I actually feel it inside of me and it disturbs me. You know, I like things clean and orderly. And so people would leave stuff all over the place and I'd go to the gym and I couldn't really work out because I felt like it's stressful to me because it's like, this might sound odd, but the psychic energy gets put into the tools in the gym, the dumbbells and things. And so the more you use something, and this is how, of course, a shaman makes an amulet. They infuse their consciousness into a gemstone or something like that, and then give it to someone, and it carries that psychic energy, which is why it's so therapeutic for people. But I would actually feel that the equipment didn't like it either. It was strange to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like the equipment, like if you leave kettlebells laying around and they're not next to their buddies, it's like strange, but there's a sense that I have. It's the very same thing I get when I lift rocks. The rocks talk to me and they tell me how they go together. I mean, to people that haven't lifted rocks or don't have much experience, they think stuff like that is just completely loony. The point being is that I think too that if people don't take care of their environment, it can make them sick because it disrupts the order of the flow of psychic energy. And I've had many patients that I said, look, you need a feng shui master to come work with your house, because I, through my process of analysis, I track back that they're being disturbed by the energy in their house. And sure enough, people have a feng shui master come and all of a sudden their headaches go away or their neck pain goes away or they can breathe better. And they actually have comments that are just like soul recovery, like they've had soul recovery done. So I think one of the elements that isn't very often talked about is that our soul really is intimate with our environment. And in my book by Jean Charon, a nuclear physicist who was a friend and co-worker with Albert Einstein, the book's called The Unknown Spirit. He actually has quite an elaborate description of the genetics, and he talks about the importance of the mother's chromosomes and the mother's egg and how the mother is eating the food typically from the environment that they live in. So what Charon shows is that we're actually, the mother's bringing in the plants and the animals from that area. And if you go back before food was shipped all over the world, he actually shows how the body of the individual is built out of the atoms that come from a specific region, have a specific charge and a unique nature to them, and gave a scientific description for why it is that we can feel homesick. Because he's saying your body is actually in resonance with the place that you come from, and that there's a non-local connection. Just like if you correlate two photons, let them interact with each other, you can separate them to opposite ends of the universe. And this is...
yeah, light years apart, and they can still...
This is proven. Alain Aspect, I think, got a Nobel Prize for proving this. But if you change the spin of one of those photons, no matter how far the other one is, no matter how many light years away, the other side of the galaxy, it instantly changes the spin of that photon. So it basically... the reason it was such a profound finding is because it basically shows there's something happening that's beyond the laws of standard causality and relativity, which is not supposed to be able to happen scientifically.
Hello, my fellow spiritual warriors and world workers. I hope you're enjoying this podcast as much as I am. It is no secret that today we are not only bombarded with so-called health and fitness information from every angle, be it social media, TV, podcasts, etc., but clearly, it's not working. Many studies conducted worldwide show that children, teens, adults, and the elderly are the most unhealthy, overweight, and the sickest they've ever been. But it does not have to be that way for you. When I wrote my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, I researched the number of diet books available at that time, and there were over 5,000 of them, each claiming to have the right diet for anyone and everyone. But the reason I wrote How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy was because these books all overlook the fact that no two people are the same, and therefore no two people are likely to get good results on the same diet. That's simply fact. Another reason the myriad of diet approaches available today fail so often is that they don't look at the underlying causes that lead to body health and mental-emotional challenges. They treat the human being as though it were a machine, and all you need to do is add this liquid or that supplement, and presto, the machine runs again. These issues are more important than ever considering the physiological, mental, emotional, environmental stress and toxicity in the world today. Today, it is critical to learn the essentials of how to eat, hydrate, breathe, cultivate life force energy, and use your mind to create the life you've always wanted to live. This is exactly what you will learn in our upcoming Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 1 training program, live with my wife and master instructor, Angie Check, May 31st through June the 2nd, 2024. This workshop is designed for anyone that genuinely wants to be healthy and is ideal for fitness enthusiasts, athletes, and parents. It's also a great chance to explore and see if you want to move into our Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 2, which is our professional level training, and pursue a career as a Holistic Lifestyle Coach today when it is so desperately needed. Not only will you be taught by Angie Check, one of the most knowledgeable experts in holistic health in the world, I will make guest appearances and answer questions. HLC 1 on May 31 through June 2nd is a rare opportunity to take HLC 1 training live at our beautiful rainbow home atop of a mountain in Fallbrook, California with beautiful views, and you get to enjoy my amazing stone-charged water and work out in my beautiful gym. Additionally, this is the only HLC 1 Live scheduled for 2024. So if you want to learn from a true master in person and get your most important questions answered, don't miss this special opportunity. If you want to meet other holistically minded people and grow your conscious community, there's no better place than our live workshops. In this important, practical 3-day training program, you will learn how to apply the 1-2-3-4 approach to developing long-term body-mind changes and how to apply the 5 essential program design factors. Learn to use your Check nutrition and lifestyle questionnaires for assessing physiological load and making essential diet and lifestyle changes. Understand the relationship between the 6 Check Foundation Principles and body-mind stress. Learn how to apply the 6 Check Foundation Principles to balance your body system so you can exemplify well-being. Identify common roadblocks to success with diet and lifestyle modifications and gain simple solutions. Discover how to use the less is more principle of exercise prescription. Early bird investment is only $810 for this 3-day workshop if you register before April 16th. To learn more and register, go to chekinstitute.com/core. That's chekinstitute.com/core. I'm sure this will be a life-changing workshop for anybody that attends, and I look forward to seeing you all here at our beautiful home in Fallbrook, California. Enjoy.
Clinically, although this wasn't a soul loss issue, it could have been categorized that way. I've had more than one of these cases, but I once had a nurse come to me who had gotten cancer, and she was always working the night shift, but she could never sleep. And one of the things that I found in the literature on circadian rhythms is that our circadian rhythms are actually set to the place that we're born at. So our internal clock, our hypothalamus, and our other clock mechanisms are set to the time of our birth zone. And the literature showed some people cannot reset. They're always set. And no matter where they go, they can never adapt to it. And so I said to this lady, I said, look, you know, you're not responding. I mean, she was seeing, she might have even been seeing Dr. Oliver. I can't remember. It was a long time ago, but I intuitively sensed I should send her home. So I said, where were you born? And she told me it was on the East Coast, over somewhere, you know, New York area. I said, I want you to go on vacation. Just, I don't care what it costs. Take time off work. Take your husband. Go on vacation. I said, you need at least 2 weeks. Sometimes I tell people they got to go camping because I want them on the earth so they can get closer to the earth's energies and not be surrounded by buzz. I said, go get a cabin or something and take 2 weeks off. And I said, and when you come back, let me know how you're doing. Well, it wasn't even a week and she got a hold of me by phone, called me at work. She said, you're not going to believe it. She said, the first night I got there, I had the deepest sleep I've had since I left. She said, I'm feeling so damn much better. She goes, this might sound strange, but I know the cancer's healing already. She could feel it inside of her. So after 2 weeks, she basically realized she has to move back to the East Coast. And so she did, because she felt so much better. But the point I'm making isn't so much about the circadian rhythms, but what I'm really showing is
connection.
The soul is out of rhythm with its environment. And so I think that that could actually be classified as soul loss, and she had to go back home to connect to the rest of her soul. And so that's a concept that I don't see written about in the literature at all, even shamanic literature, none of it.
You know, so you say, we're so connected to everything. When you start doing this work, you realize how deeply we're connected. You know, it's just every, you know, it's just, you know, the earth, the soil, the tools we use every day, you know, your sofa, your chair, everything's so deeply connected. And so, yeah, when we abruptly leave a situation like that, there can be a loss of those articles.
This is a loaded question. You know, all the issues about abortion, and a lot of the religious people say, you know, you're killing the soul of the baby if you have an abortion. And then there's, say, people that say, no, it doesn't have a soul yet until it's born. So there's a lot of conflict in that opinion. I'm just wondering, based on your experience of everything and what you know, when do you feel the soul actually enters the body and is in the body?
Okay, yeah. So,
in the womb.
So when a woman gets pregnant, there is a soul connection to a soul, but it, what happens is it's just like, I think of this infinite amount of energy from the ethers coming into this body, it's like stuffing a genie in a bottle. So it doesn't happen overnight. So it's a little bit at a time, and it takes a while. And so they say that once there's a soul connection, there's an energetic form of a fetus, even if it's not there yet in the womb. I think the misconception is that you kill the soul. You never kill the soul. A soul lives forever. So that there may be a soul coming in and out, but it's not fully present until the body's fully formed. You know, it's just like we have to be fully in our body. The soul has to be fully in our body to be fully in existence. When the body is not fully there, the soul is not fully present. So it's kind of the body goes in and the soul comes back out, and it's slowly getting pushed in a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And it isn't really till that, you know, baby is born that it's really fully connected to that body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, there is those questions of whether I think the biggest thing is to realize we don't kill souls. Souls never die, you know, so souls can get stuck. Yes, absolutely. But I think that, you know, there can be a lot more soul damage when a person's forced to have a child that, you know, it's not in line with the person. You know, imagine being born in a woman who was raped, and mm-hmm. now she has to carry this child and have all this anger towards, and has to look at this child in disgust because it was from this perpetrator. What does that do to a person long term, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So you're actually releasing that soul, you know, and saying, you know, let's do this again in a more loving way, you know. And mm-hmm. So my siding is with the mother and saying, you know, we want to nurture humans in this existence. And I think we're having so much, you know, evil in this world and lack of love, that to bring more and more souls in with lack of love is not the answer to our environment.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, so that would be my answer, is to say that the soul comes in slowly and it's not fully present yet. You know, and there, so it takes a while for the soul to deeply connect into that.
I have never asked you this, even though we've been married for, what, 11 years now?
Almost 12, yeah.
Almost 12. Even though we do both very similar work. You know, there's been many times when the kids were younger, when we went to the park, or when we're around kids in public, like at Legoland and stuff, I see a lot of kids that their souls are not in their bodies. They're not connected to them. And I remember we were at the park once. You might remember it. I think it was before Zoe was here. Mana might have been 2 or 3. And a lady came up to us and said, "How old is your child?" And, you know, Mana was climbing and doing stuff that her kids that were like 2 years older couldn't even do. And she was just shocked because she was like looking at how could this little guy climb these ladders and do all these things. And you and I talked about what it probably was, which is the safe and effective choice is the medical term for that. I remember looking at those kids and feeling and seeing that their souls were not in their bodies. You look into their eyes and there's a profound emptiness there.
Yeah, any traumatic experience that child goes through is gonna alter their ability for the soul to fully inhabit the body. And so, you know, so many things that are happening in the world can prevent that child from, you know, soul from fully being present. And then you see that. You see this, you know, even my mom just recently commented, she goes, you know, your kids have these glow to them. They're just radiate. They have these, you know, rosy cheeks and they've got this brightness to them. And they've got like this, she was like, it's almost like an auric field. They're just glowing. Mm-hmm. She goes, and I see kids, because she also works in the medical industry, and she goes, and they just look pasty and dull and lifeless. And she goes, and I just can't help but notice how different your children look than a lot of these children in the world.
Yeah.
And so it has to do with, you know, vitality. So food, and you think about everything having a soul. Well, food has a soul. And if you're not empty, food is empty soul. It's soulless food.
And the food, the souls of the plants and the animals get traumatized.
Right. So for, you know, just, you know, giving them sick food and toxic food, that and that soul can't thrive because it's not getting that, like you said, the environment isn't, you know, impregnating on them.
Yeah.
And so we can see that loss. And it's really sad, you know, and you see, like I said, lack of coordination, lack ability to feel, lack ability to really be fully engaged in the world.
It's as though all their senses are dumbed down, dulled.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like they're, I describe it as a metaphor of throwing a wet blanket over somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's, there's a barrier between everything. Mm-hmm. It's like they're just not there. I believe it's not just individuals that have a soul, but groups of people, such as a family, a sports team, those working in a company or corporation where there's a unified goal or objective, and even a given religious group, such as people practicing a religion together in a church or temple. I'm curious, do you think there can be soul loss in a situation of group souls, or can soul recovery be applied in these situations, or do you think it can only be performed on an individual basis?
Yeah, you know, when I read this question, I was like, oh, I've never really thought about it, but yes, indeed, you know, and you know, I usually do individual soul loss, but you know, it's just like we watched that movie, The Boys in the Boat, the other day.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great example.
And at the very end, he said, you know, his little grandson says, Dad, what was it like with you rowing with eight men? He goes, oh, no, we weren't eight. We were one.
Yes.
You know, and that's exactly, you know, this what we're talking about is you become one with those individuals you work intimately with. And so there is a soul connection to all of them, you know, and it's like we have soul families, and we laugh all the time about it when we have our classes. It's like, we ask the students where they're from or what they're into, and it's like a theme every time mm-hmm. we have a class. It's a different theme every time, but mm-hmm. it's like, oh, we have our martial artists all show up. Oh, we have all our physical therapists show up. Oh, there's now doctors in this one, or they're all suffering from the same emotional trauma.
Or they're all, you know, half of them are going through a divorce or a business crash or a death in the family.
Yeah, so it's all this soul loss. They say that when we're on airplanes, we're traveling with soul families, and so there's a lot of connection to the people that are actually on that airplane with you. And so can we heal at that level? And yeah, we definitely could, you know? And so that might be something fun to explore, is to go into companies and corporations where there's a team and work with them all at a soul level, and to mm-hmm. say how you can pick up the fragments of loss that have occurred in them so that they all become collectively stronger.
This made me giggle because, you know, I'll go behind you where you sit to control the online stuff and climb up the stairs so I can look down and see everybody's art.
Uh-huh.
And I'm standing up there and I'm going, Falcon or Hawk, Falcon, Hawk, or Eagle, Falcon. And there was like six of them. So of all the people painting mandalas, I mean, the number of them that had
the same images.
The same basic imagery of a bird.
Yeah.
And all of them with the wings open. Like the same posture, not a bird sitting on a branch.
Right. They all had the same
position. All had the same theme. And of course, they all did the prep work that I gave them at home, right? So this was already planned out before they got there.
Yeah, it wasn't like they looked at someone else and said, oh, I'll draw that too.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, interesting note, I'm going to share something that I do that is soul work. It's usually families that I do this with. I get, as I'm sure you do, I get a lot of people coming to me with health problems, and I track it back to challenges in the family. And so I know that they're not going to heal until we work on the family. In fact, I'll share a case with you because I know it would be okay, and it wasn't about family per se. It was about the locals. When Jared Picard was, him and his father bought 400 acres in San Francisco wine country, very expensive investment, and they were going to build their hotel there, the Be Here Now Hotel. And they had to do a lot of work to get the zoning laws changed in order for them to be able to build that there. But the locals were very resistant because their first thought is, oh, you're going to build a hotel. We're going to have all kinds of traffic. And they didn't like it at all. So what I had them do is I had them get the names of all the people that lived, you know, within a mile or two of where the Be Here Farm was going to be, and go talk to each of them, tell him what he was going to do, and find out who had resistance to it. So he came back, and then I showed him how to make a Native American family matrix and reorganize the energies of those people in the matrix so that they work together. So I taught him how to get his soul to guide him. And it's a very trippy story. And he had already gone out and done a couple of rounds of discussion. And, you know, that was why he was so scared, because he had to go talk to these people anyhow, because it might impact their property, for example, or it might cause a lot of traffic on the road. Or so he needed to, in order to get the zoning laws, he had to go make sure everybody approved of it, or the city wouldn't give him the permit. So he knew who the problem people were, who were really against it, because he'd already had talks with them. And so I taught him how to do the Native American family matrix. I taught him how to use his soul to connect to each of their souls. Then he made a symbol for each of them, set the whole thing up like I taught him. And then I said, okay, now you've got to talk to their souls and your soul and ask your soul to guide you how to organize how they fit together. So the psychic energy flows through the people in the community. And I said, then share what it is that you're doing with their souls, not with their egos. But the long and the short of it is he does this. And then he calls me on the phone. He goes, you're not going to believe it. I went and talked to these people, and it's like they weren't even the same people. He said, I didn't have any problems at all on it. And he ended up getting it, all the zoning and everything fixed up without any problem. But prior to that, he was just hitting road bump after road bump. So the point I'm making is that using the Native American family Indian family matrix system, I've actually done work on families and on groups like this that aren't really a group, but are a group because they've got similar concerns or, you know, resistance to. And I told them, you know, you can't do black magic. You can't use this to trick people into doing it. You have to talk to their souls and share your heart's intention to let them know what you're really doing there. And you know, because he's super environmentally conscious, he didn't want to do anything that was going to, I mean, he was a minimal footprint type job. And so I brought that up just because I think, I mean, you think of all the problems that you see people having at work.
Yeah, and that's good for people to know that you don't have to speak to people directly. You can speak to them at a soul level. Whether they're still alive or dead, deceased, you can still connect to that person and do a lot of healing.
Hello to all of you. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you all for joining me and helping make the world a better place for all living beings each day. I suspect most of you are aware that people are having a harder time sleeping than ever, and you may be one of them. As you can imagine, there are many reasons for this, but the turmoil in the world is surely enough to keep most people's adrenaline and cortisol running high, obstructing one's ability to get deep, restful sleep when it is needed most. But you don't want to lose sleep when parenting demands are high, jobs require alertness for performance and injury prevention, and the ultimate safety and security is your own health. There is no method of regeneration and vitalization more powerful than sleep. One of the challenges with many of the sleep aids I've tested is that they often include melatonin or ingredients that stimulate melatonin production specifically. Any such product has left me feeling jet-lagged upon waking and feeling as though my natural hormone rhythms have been disrupted, and I know many others have reported that to me as well. As is so often the case, Organifi come to the rescue with an all-natural, non-melatonin-based sleep product. Organifi Sleep is a carefully crafted nighttime blend with a powerful blend of amino acids and organic herbs that promotes relaxation and facilitates a deeper, more restful sleep. A truly holistic solution for a rejuvenating and peaceful night's sleep. Organifi Sleep is easy to use. Just add it to water or any of your favorite nighttime beverages, stir, and drink for a beautiful, restful sleep. Wake up revitalized, energized, and ready to be your best in all that you do each day. To get your Organifi Sleep, go to organifi.com/CHEK20. That's organifi.com/CHEK20, CHEK20. To get your 20% off, use the promo code capital C, capital H, capital E, capital K, 20 for 20% off on checkout. Enjoy a deep, restful sleep with Organifi Sleep.
You know, if you wanted to do a soul recovery for yourself, you would want to go into like a meditative state, carve out some time, just like you would have an appointment with me, carve out some time to be relaxed and by yourself. And then you, with the intention of going in and saying, you know, I have the intention to heal this part of me that's, and maybe that person doesn't even know what it is that they need to heal. You can go in with the intention saying, show me what parts of me need healing. Show me what events in my life are still stuck in my field that I haven't gotten over. And with that intention, they can go through a meditation and they might be able to see that work. Oftentimes when a person's doing this on their own, you have to have that connection to that part of you, just like it's a piece of you, but it's like a entity of itself. And you can have a connection to it and saying, what do I need to do for you to come back fully? And I think that's really important. People to say, oh, I'm just going to grab these parts of me and bring them back. Everything's good, you know, and I'm done. But it really, we said, well, that's part of you left for a reason. It needs to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so that work needs to say, what do I need to do now so that you feel safe inside this body? And you, if you listen, you will get a response and it'll tell you things that you need to do. And it might sound really stupid. It might be like, hey, you know, you used to ride your bike as a kid and after you fell off it, you never rode your bike again. And there's part of me that still wants to ride a bike. And you might mm-hmm. be like, go back and ride your bicycle. And you're like, are you kidding me? That's so stupid. And then you don't do it. Well, the thing is, if there's a part of you that, you know, it's like you're telling, please come back to me. And you say, yeah, I'll do it. And you don't. Then there's this distrust with part of your soul. And then you risk that part of your soul not wanting to come back ever. So you really want to take this stuff seriously. And when you get a message that says you need to do something, to really honor that and then say, I'm going to do this so that you feel safe inside of me again.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of work that you can do alone. Absolutely.
And there are books. Well, Sandra Ingerman
she's great.
Is one. So if you're interested in self-guided soul recovery, she's a legitimate shaman. And I read her book. It was very good. There's others, but it only takes one.
Yeah, just one and connect to it. You know, ask your soul which book you should read and then, you know, read that and try that practice and see what happens. But you'll know if it's working because you will feel a distinct shift in your physiology, in your mentality, like I said, in your senses, and you'll know that, hey, this is actually working for me.
Yeah, now you're saying ask your soul and you and I, that's so natural. We forget that most people haven't got a clue what to do. But really, it's quite simple. If you have an honest question for your soul, first of all, get yourself in an environment where you can be calm and centered, not distracted. I'd recommend doing some slow, deep breathing exercises to take yourself into a real calm, meditative state. I find it's most useful if you put one hand over your heart. You experiment with your left hand over your heart. See how you feel. Try your right hand over your heart. Whichever one gives you the most sense of calming and grounding is the hand you should put over your heart. Then bring your awareness down to your heart and just say, dear soul, how do I handle this situation? Or, whatever the question is, where should I invest this money, etc. And after you ask the question, you have to completely stop thinking. You have to completely empty your mind and listen as though you were waiting for your baby to speak to you and try to communicate something to you, or you're trying to figure out what it is that your dog's trying to convey to you. But it's a deep listening state. And then whatever comes into your mind, almost like your own thoughts, is your soul talking to you, except you know you're not doing the talking. And the answer you'll know is your soul, because the answer will be better than the one you could have come up with. And you will have this sense of, clearly I'm being answered. There's many other factors, but I don't have the time and this isn't the place to get into, but that's the good way to start.
You know, besides books, there are some great people that have meditations out there. I know that Dakota Earth Cloud Walker, that was the teacher of the medicine wheel that I took, she has some great meditations out there to guide you into these practices, and her meditations are quite phenomenal. So you could download that. You know, I think they would cost like $5, mm-hmm. you know, and you could have a guided, and she's a shaman, you know, yeah. to guide you through a self soul retrieval, you know, soul recovery is what you'd call it. A retrieval is usually that soul retrieval. Those words are designated to working with a shaman and retrieving it. And soul recovery is when you do your individual self work.
Good. What tips do you have for listeners regarding how to choose someone to perform soul recovery on them? I ask this because, as you know, there's a lot of pseudo shaman out there and people offering these types of services that don't really have the depth of knowledge, practice, or skill to work with people that have, you know, legitimate or significant challenges that really should be in the hands of a professional. So how do you suggest someone choose a professional?
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's word of mouth, finding someone who's had an actual good experience from somebody. Again, you just taught them some soul connection. I would say connect to your soul and ask, is this person right for me to work mm-hmm. with? Because you'll get this strong no. Like, I know that when I connect to my soul, if it's a no, I feel a pushback in my body. It's like I'm rejecting. If I'm looking at a picture of someone, I'll be like, don't do that. But if it's somebody that I need to connect with, it's like I feel myself reaching towards them. Like, I energetically want to go towards them. That's a good sign. So, you know, ask questions. Don't be afraid to have an interview. Like, when people want to work with me, I do a 15-minute free consult to make sure it's a good fit for both of us and make sure that we're working together and we're on the same page, because I want them to have a good experience and I want to make sure that they're right for it and that they're right for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's important. And, you know, people who are, you know, very flashy, oh, I'm going to solve all your problems in one session, you know, that's a bad sign, you know. And so oftentimes I tell people to write me a list of things that they want to look at. And, you know, if it's a very large list, there's no way I can do it one day, nor would you want to, you know. And
you
so
can't.
This work isn't something, like I said, just, oh, finish it, I'm all back and complete now. You know, depending on the intensity of those events, you might only be able to take a few fragments at a time.
Yeah.
You know, two,
well,
three.
There's maintenance work.
And there's maintenance work, and there's things that they may not be doing. So that's important to ask the questions of how they do the work. And they may not be tell you step by step of how they do it, but they should give you a firm understanding of how it's going to happen. And you know, listen to your body and listen to your gut to see if that feels right for you.
Do you believe that there is a world soul?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so when we think about soul family, soul groups, you think about it even, you know, the earth soul, you know, and so recognizing that everything on here could be healed together collectively, you know. And I think that's really something that's going to be beneficial at this time of our lives, you know, with the world in all the states of chaos, that we can collectively help heal, you know, with our intention that we can. When we heal one soul, we heal collectively the other soul. So it's just this spiral effect in a positive direction. You know, it's like, you know, it's so subtle that you might get a massage. You might notice that you feel so much more amazing. And then because you're feeling more amazing, your family feels great because you feel great. And you see that transpire with just the healing touch. And so you recognize through the intention of healing the world, you know, it can make a dramatic impact on the world we're at now.
What do you feel the world soul is suffering from with regard to soul loss at the present time?
Yeah, well, you know, you've talked about a little bit with all this, you know, media and exposure to screen times and disconnection to the human body, you know, and I think that's a huge thing that we're suffering from. And along with it is lack of love, you know, a lack of connection. You know, no one has a time for anything anymore. It's like someone says, how are you? And it's like they don't really want to know. They're already walking past you. It's like, I got to go. I don't have time for that. So I think really we need to slow the pace down on the world and reconnect. And I think that's missing right now is, mm-hmm. you know, disassociation to their body and lack of connection to who we are and, you know, where we came from and our earth and lack of connection to nature.
As scientific materialism has gotten more deeply rooted in the human psyche, humanity has changed its orientation from plants, animals, trees, ecosystems, from being living beings, as it was so common for native populations, to objects that we can just do whatever we want with. So I think part of the soul loss in the world is that Mother Nature is actually being dissected alive, literally just being dissected, and because she needs love and nurture too, it's like a dog that's just getting kicked and kicked and kicked and not fed and not loved. But at the same time, you know, that's our seeing eye dog metaphorically. She's the one keeping us alive. So I feel that we really have to bring our consciousness and our love back into the earth and do some healing for the earth, because she's under tremendous burden more than ever. And without her, we're dead, at least on this level. And so I think that's something we've all got to consider, that the planet's got some pretty serious soul loss. And, you know, as we said, when someone has soul loss, they're susceptible to entity possession. And I don't know about you, but like, and I know many others feel this way, but I look at Bill Gates and some of these people from the World Economic Forum, and I just don't see a human soul in there. It's as though they themselves have been possessed by something that is not from this world. And as I shared in my Lucifer Christ Ahriman podcast, Steiner talked all about Ahriman as the spirit of the material realm, of pure matter, the spirit of the machine and of electronic gadgets, and they don't have any care for nature. They're like not of this world. And so as we get further and further into all these 5G satellites and all this cell phone abuse and radio towers and constant surveying and monitoring with billions of cameras everywhere and you know, really turning this into an open prison.
And the programming, you know, like we were just discussing these movies that are coming out for children.
Yes.
That new one that's supposed to come out, I think it's called World of Hell, and it's trying to justify Lucifer and how, you know, heaven was being mean to Lucifer and we should all be loving Lucifer. And it's just really twisted, you know, and so that's that programming for our young children that are so, you know,
open and vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah, it's really a sad, sad state.
You know, and it's interesting when you do this kind of work, it's like people are, I feel like there's a common theme of loneliness. And when they do this work, you realize how not alone you are. You know, you're
right.
The plants are speaking to you, the birds are speaking to you, animals and fairies, all these things. And you realize how deeply connected and loved you are. And that's so amazing. It's like when I first started doing this work, I started realizing, recognizing. And the more you are aware of it, the more animals are aware of it too, and they respond to you. And I remember one time I was walking on the golf course, and it was like I felt like you know, Snow White or something. And the birds were coming over, and they were following me through the trees. And this, you know, I saw the squirrels coming out. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. It's like, but it felt so deeply connected to all things. And it's like there's a vibrational energy when you're connected and feeling that they feel and they sense. And
oh yes,
yeah, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
And when you have a connection to, you know, we talk about the soul with one animal, you have the connection with all those animals. Like when we had that connection to Sunil, our hummingbird, it's like I felt like we rescued, if people don't know, we rescued a little hummingbird that had fallen from its nest and we raised it. That was our first child.
Yeah.
And it flew, we taught it to fly. And finally we set it out in the wild, and it came back and let us know it was doing well. And it was such an amazing experience. But ever since that experience, I've had such a deep connection to hummingbirds. Like they know, it's like, they're like, oh, there's that girl who helped us.
Yes.
And they have this inner knowing that you are safe and you are okay. And you've had that hummingbird land on your shoulder when you're talking on the phone out at the Heaven House.
Yeah, actually I was doing an instructor meeting. All my instructors were there, which was quite funny. And I don't know, I was talking to Penny or something, and a hummingbird.
And you were like shooing it away.
A hummingbird landed on one shoulder, then another bird landed on the other shoulder. And then a lizard jumped off the wall of the house onto my chest, and all my students are staring at me like, what in the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And so they said to me, like, how come that never happens to me? I said, well, you know, try about 18 years of Tai Chi and, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
About 1,000 shamanic it's journeys so and many. You'll find your friends coming around.
Yeah, absolutely. We do those Tai Chi and HLC too. And I've had snails crawling up my leg, and people are like, that snail just literally, I watched it, it just took 20 minutes and it got up to your leg and started crawling your leg. It's like, what's up with that? And it's so amazing. So that is fun when you connect at that level. And I said, like, you connect to one animal and you connect to all of them. And it's a beautiful thing to have that connection to soul at that deep level.
What do you suggest people do if they're conscious enough to realize that what we're talking about is real, if they want to contribute to healing the world's soul?
You know, I believe you were talking too that you were going to do something online.
I am. I'm going to do a 22-day world healing and teach people how to do non-local healing and world healing, so people can join that. It'll be on my YouTube channel, might be on my Instagram.
Yeah, you know, in 2020, when everybody was going, what do we do? What do we do? I offered a free meditation that helped heal, you know, balance your chakras. And I'm still willing to offer that out to people. So if they contact me, I'd be happy to give them, it's a 30-minute meditation to balance the chakras that helps balance not only you, but extends out into the world. So it's an earth healing meditation as well as a individual healing meditation.
I think if a person just takes a few minutes in the morning or in the evening when they're calm and centered and just open your heart to Mother Earth and just give her love and ask, how can you be of service? You know, don't ask unless you're willing to do something, though, because that's just silliness. But, you know, I've asked many times and the answer I get is, get Spirit Jim out there.
Yes.
Wake these people up.
Right.
You know, show them what's really going on here. They're asleep. All my kids they're drunk and stoned and
right.
Distracted. They need to pay attention to mama.
Well, I always tell people we vote with our dollars. So it's like, you know, if you're eating real whole food, you're contributing to the health of the planet. And so I know some people are sometimes like, oh, I don't love myself enough to eat organic, but I'm like, well, do you love the planet enough? And sometimes
right.
They're like, yes. And so I'm like, well, then eat for the planet.
Yeah.
Because you're supporting the planet by choosing those foods.
That's very true. I hope some of you maybe found an understanding of some things that have been going on in your life or people that you know and love, and realize that there are ways you can help, especially if you've tried other approaches and it just seems like nothing's working. I find that's the most common reasons people come to me is and say, I need help because nothing's working. And that's often because they've got soul loss. What services do you offer?
Yeah, I do soul retrievals. I do past life regression. You know, I do a lot of energy healing, do the HLC training, you know, so that's...
And you help people communicate to loved ones on the other side.
So if there's anything like that that you're needing to connect to feel more complete, that's the kind of work I do. My email is angiesworld@me.com. That's me.com. Angies is A-N-G-I-E-S without the apostrophe. angiesworld@me.com. And they can reach out to me through an email and get a hold of me that way. And I can, you know, have a conversation with them and see what's right for them.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you to all of you. We really need to do some work on the world soul together. So if the only thing you got out of this conversation was a willingness to just donate 5 minutes of real honest presence and 5 minutes of just expressing love to the world with the intention of giving Mother Earth love she can use for her own healing, that's a good thing. And it's a good practice because the more love you make to share, the more love you have and the better you get at making love. So,
boomerang effect.
I think it's just a good practice to create love in ourselves each day, especially when the world's kind of chaotic, because love has a very strong harmonizing effect on us. And it's negentropic. It's the opposite of chaos. It brings order into the body and coherence into the body. So thank you, guys. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope you enjoyed my clarifications on the soul. I hope you now see why when the World Economic Forum says there is no soul, and you hear futurists and AI nerds saying that they can load the soul on a hard drive, good luck. It just means you don't know what a soul is. And
I'll be doing soul archive hard drive retrievals.
Yeah, exactly. All these people lost in hard drives everywhere. And thank you to the sponsors. I love you. All their products are awesome. We use them all right here in our family. I don't offer you anything that we don't use ourselves and that I don't fully approve of and that don't meet our very strict values that we use to keep our kids healthy and strong. And so I appreciate all of you. Anything you buy from the sponsors supports the podcast. I get a little commission to support me and the podcast, so I thank you for that. And I also love knowing you're spending your money through the companies that are actually doing amazing things in the world and for the world. So I look forward to sharing something exciting with you next week. Lots of love. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Living 4D with Paul Check and today's guest, Angie Check. You can find Angie online at angiesworld.com, where you can learn more about her coaching and consulting services, including energy medicine and soul retrieval. That's angiesworld.com. Follow her on Instagram at oneanginator, that's the number one and A-N-G-I-N-A-T-O-R, or on Facebook, just search for Angie Check. Catch up with Paul on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at paul.check, on X at paulcheck, or on his YouTube podcast channel, youtube.com/living4D with Paul Check. Watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com or visit the Check Institute site at checkinstitute.com to find Paul's e-learning courses, advanced training programs, and learn more about the Check Academy. You can read the show notes and find links to the resources mentioned in this episode at checkinstitute.com/podcast. This podcast would not be possible without the support of our premier sponsors, Bioptimizers, Organifi, and Paleo Valley. Please show your appreciation by taking advantage of their special discounts for our listeners. The links are in the show notes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and a warm review on the podcast platform of your choice. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and YouTube.